the delay. There are three types of mitzvahs, three categories of mitzvahs. The most preponderant form of a mitzvah is a mitzvah of our bodies. Most of our mitzvahs dictate activities, ban certain activities, and those are relatively easy to execute. Obviously, every mitzvah is enhanced by the corresponding understanding of the mitzvah, the identification, the attitude. It's a good chance for me to plug my post-chakra shir, now that the Americans have left, so everyone's welcome to come. We need some reinforcements in the post-chakra shir. Feel free to come certain days and not other days. We talked about it this week, Uli Avdo Bechol Levavchem Bechol Nafshechem. When a person performs a mitzvah, is there a sense of identification, of engagement? But certainly, even if you don't feel that engagement, you're mekayim a mitzvah, The Gemara Paskins mitzvahs ain't srichas kavana. You can fulfill most mitzvahs without any kavana. You have to be cognizant, you have to be conscious, you can't be sleeping, you can't be drunk, you have to be aware of what you're involved in, but these deeper symbolisms aren't necessarily ma'akev, a mitzvah. Mitzvah is a robotic physical activity, or avoiding certainly. Let's say you never eat basar b'chalav, and you never understand why you shouldn't eat basar b'chalav. See, even you're opposed to the mitzvah of basar b'chalav, but you don't eat basar b'chalav. You still have avoided the isser. You haven't violated any isser. It's certainly not the healthiest and sturdiest religious state. The second type of a mitzvah, which we're studying this year, in the summer, in the parashas of Kriyat Shema, are the tenets of belief and faith. What does a Jew have to believe in, not just what does a Jew have to perform with their bodies? So these are more or less enshrined as the 13 principles of the Rambam. There are some disagreements about certain Ikarei Emunah, this type of animam and this principle, but basically there's a set of ideas that a person has to study and more or less subscribe to. Now that's a little bit more challenging because they're choices rather than activities, and they demand certain engagement, identification, assimilation. But at least the mechanics and the methodology seems plausible. You study, you try to understand, hopefully you buy in, you subscribe, you advocate, but at least the path is clear. How do you believe in theology? You study, more or less, you listen to people, you have conversations, you read books. But then there's a third category of mitzvah that seems to be very daunting, very elusive. Mitzvahs not that govern our bodies, they're not mitzvahs that legislate our minds, but mitzvahs that calibrate our emotions. There are two mitzvahs that are emotional. Person is commanded to love Hashem and is commanded to fear Hashem. How do you legislate emotions? And that question is intimidating on two fronts. Number one, how do you even legislate what a person feels passionate about? I hate chocolate ice cream. Nothing in the world can change that. You could feed me an endless supply of chocolate ice cream. I would hate it. How can the Torah command me what to feel passion for when passions seem to be very, very deeply wired? Some arbitrary, why do I like vanilla and not chocolate? Some arbitrary aspect of my life or some encounter. But there's a more daunting part of this challenge. In theory, if you told me that I was obligated religiously to love chocolate ice cream, I could probably eat chocolate ice cream, put some toppings on, find some way, develop some taste, an accrued taste. But Hashem is unknowable. It's not chocolate ice cream. He's unfathomable. I don't know who he is. No word in the English lexicon can describe him, can't sculpt him. Imagination is completely incompetent and inadequate. So how does the Torah command and legislate an emotion about a being that we can't begin to understand, articulate, imagine? That's the real challenge of Judaism. That's when you know you've passed from just being from at a distance to really feeling HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, and it's a lifelong process. Get ready. I just had departure conversations with a lot of the boys leaving, and most of our conversations were centered upon this issue. I know how you grew, your skills changed, you came to Minyan on time, you now can read a Tosfos, but tell me, how did your Avodas Hashem change? So many people said, well, this trait was improved, and I'm more careful about the way I speak and about the way I dress. I say, okay, but tell me, do you feel a kesher to Hashem? Do you feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do you feel a kesher to some being you can't even imagine? And how do you feel love? And That's what we're going to talk about today, and unfortunately, because we don't have enough time today, we'll talk about it next week in Mirat Hashem. We'll continue. How do you love Hashem? And then we'll parlay into how do you fear Hashem. Really important. Really at the core of Avodas Hashem. Yes?
The second category, wouldn't that be belief?
Yeah, that's belief.
Is that not emotion?
No. In theory, you feel no emotion. You can be dispassionate, but I agree with these ideas. but it's a passion. I don't need to know how you make chocolate ice cream. That's belief. That's science. That's information. I need to love chocolate ice cream or to dislike chocolate ice cream. That's a passion. So the Rambam writes, source number one, Hakel Anichbar V'Hanar Hazem Mitzvah Li'ahavo Li'Yiroso. Here the Rambam outlines the actual mitzvahs. So you have a mitzvah to love Hashem. So Emro V'Yaptas Hashem Elokecha. You say it every day. And the second mitzvah, which we'll talk about in a few weeks, to fear Hashem. Not really to fear, but we'll talk about it when it emerges, when it arrives. Shenemar Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. And the Rambam is pretty clear. Hei Chi HaDerech Li'Ahavaso V'Yiroso. How do you achieve... For the meantime, Avas Hashem. We'll get to Yir Hashemayim. We'll circle back to this Rambam. How do you acquire Avas Hashem? In a nutshell, before we read the Rambam, I'll paraphrase it for you. Spare you the drama. Expose yourself to the grandeur and the majesty of Hashem's creation. Not the only way. The Rambam will describe three ways. But one way is to love Hashem through intoxication and enchantment with His majesty, to see His breath, His sweep, His beauty, His order. And those are different ways to access Hashem through His creation. Some of you are more mathematically inclined, some of you are more poetic, some of you, but are you able to be awed and intrigued by things HaKadosh Baruch Hu created? You may not be able to understand Hashem. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But can you look at His creation? And when I say creation, I don't just mean creation as if nature, although nature as well. Torah is also Hashem's creation. It's more Hashem's creation than creation, because it's His will. Let's say you didn't get to meet me the whole year. I was on sabbatical. But you heard about this rabbi that teaches and he's not here. You want to get to know me a little bit at a distance. So you could sneak into my house and taste the challah that I make. Make a good challah. Maybe some of you could come over and have some challah. You say, well, you like spicy challah, more meat, less meat, barley. I can infer, I can try to illustrate who he is based on his challah. If I eat his challah and his chocolate cake and I look at the way he arranges his room and the way house he built, and I start to build a profile. Or you could send me an email with 10 questions, what my position is about, what my view is about, what I feel about, what I believe about. What are those 10 questions worth 1,000 questions? What are those 1,000 questions or 100,000 questions or 10 million questions? So you want to understand Hashem, you can't meet Him. You could either look at His chocolate cake and His challah and His home and look at Him through nature, which is helpful. Or you could ask Him 10 questions or 10,000 questions or 10 million questions, which is His Torah. So both are helpful, but you have to be able to see in Torah Hashem's will, not just Hashem's creativity. One second. And that's why Rav Moshe Feinstein will always understand more of Hashem than Albert Einstein. Because he's listening to Hashem's will. He's hearing, what do you think about? What is your will about? What do you think? And of course, you have to decode it because there are details. You have to be able to induce from the details principles. What is Hashem's will about architecture? So you study Maseches Shabbos and you study Maseches Olas, as we talked about. So that's what the Rambam writes. Just a second. The Rambam writes, Bishashi is bonin hadam b'ma'asav uvruav haniflaim. You see the word niflaim? It's an important word. Wondrous, majestic, broad, panoramic, eye-popping, breathtaking. Hagdolim, they're great. V'yera mem chachmasa shein la'erech v'lokates. Another important qualifier. Infinity, breath, endlessness. These are traits that are very rare in today's world. They're rare because it takes a certain degree of depth and resonance and thought, and the world is quickening and accelerating and forcing you to process in very shallow, immediate terms rather than deep terms. I think I told you this earlier in our meetings. When's the last time you sat down and you thought about one idea in total silence without speaking to someone else for more than 10 minutes? I imagine for many of you, the answer is very elusive, because the world is so quick, and the information barrage is so unstoppable. And the only way we handle it is by deferring to shallow, quick judgments, because we just have to move on to the next feed, and to the next Facebook post, to the next video, or to the next frame per second, which is just rattling at warp speed. The next time you use YouTube, which I'm sure will be banned as manim, because you don't use it in yeshiva, go to YouTube and pull up a video, a music video from the 80s. Just put down 80s top music videos and watch it. And try to ask yourself, what's different about the 80s video and the video you're watching in 2018? And there's one answer, the FPSs, the frames per second. You'll be able to see there's a real notable difference. And ask yourself about the experience. Try to feel what it's like to process less information, but to process it more deeply, to engage in it more viscerally. Has anyone here been to the Blind Museum in Cologne? Have you gone there? Did you feel a certain degree of identification and engagement in your own emotions and even in thoughts and feelings towards ideas and others, because there was a total shutdown of visual stimuli? Your eyes weren't forced to process that much. And here's a mental experiment for those of you who wear glasses and spectacles. Sit down and somebody, assuming your eyesight is weak. Take your glasses off for 15 minutes when you're thinking, and you'll see it's a very different experience, because you're sparing your processes from all that visual input. Or if you don't have glasses, close your eyes. Again, don't squint, but keep them closed, or go into some corner and put your head down where you don't have to face and think. And we're just processing so much, and the price we're paying is shallowness. We also live in a world of science and information, so we don't allow ourselves to be awed or excited by information, because we all know it exists. And when's the last time you were really excited about the way the human body operates, or nature, or ecology, or space, or science, or art, or music that Hashem, and were you able to trace it to a religious root? Wow, how did Hashem give human beings the ability to excite one another with art and culture? Where does that come from? It's not human-driven. It's powered by Hashem. Hashem gave human beings the capability to communicate. Animals don't have culture. Animals don't exchange music. All their communication is perfunctory and technical, to knowing where to migrate, how to eat, where to breed. When's the last time you looked at the internet through religious lenses? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu empowering us with by the ability to exchange information so quickly and so effortlessly? What are the challenges religiously? Able to take that lens and say, this comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gives us the spark of intuition and ingenuity, and hopefully we can employ these sparks productively. Also, in today's world, there's sometimes a fear of intellectual activity, because so often intellectual activity spirals out of control and replaces faith and passion and delivered truths. And I'm more guilty of that than anyone else. I've told you so many times in my chugim that the seat of belief isn't cognitive or empirical. You try to empirically, rationally prove religion, you won't. And we are at our greatest and most courageous when we accept delivered truths from others, and we suspend our own disbelief and our own self-arbitration to the truths that other people have accepted and received, or in some cases ironed out. But intellect can elucidate faith. It can't establish faith, but can illustrate and amplify faith. Faith has to be the backbone or the anchor. You bind to certain ideas because you trust people to deliver those ideas to you, and you see in those ideas inherent truth. But then your intellect can lend sophistication, depth, and counter. And in certain circles, there's a fear of intellect. It's almost as if you want to insult someone, you're too intellectual, and that's you're rendering an insult to that person. And I think people are forfeiting opportunities in Avas Hashem because of these three challenges. Because we live in a shallow world, because we live in a world in which we have depleted our ability to feel awe. We no longer feel that awe because everything has been analyzed. We feel like everything that needs to be analyzed has been. We live in a world that feels very, very concretely organized by science and technology, as if there's nothing that's going to shock us or engage us. And in part because I think we're afraid to show intellectual curiosity. Think carefully about the books you read. I haven't interviewed each and every one of you, but listening to boys, the little that you read tends to be science fiction and I'm not sure how much you're gaining from science fiction. I know why you're reading science fiction. There's an escapism that's very, very attractive to this generation. It creates an alternate reality that you can thrust yourself into and escape some of the pressures and frustrations that this world brings. I'm not sure how much depth there is. Ask yourself when you walk away, was there real depth that I see character development, relationships, ideas? Some cases there might be. Science fiction may just be a genre to house deep ideas and deep personal developments of characters and interactions. But in many cases, it's just science fiction for the sake of escapism. Science fiction not as the framework, but science fiction as the content. In many cases, you're wasting really good opportunities to read books of greater substance or ideas of greater substance and to develop your depth, your ability to see things in complex, to be thirsty for ideas, to be thirsty. Are you thirsty for ideas? Ask yourself that question. Supposedly, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's wife was named Eleanor Roosevelt. So this is a quote which is attributed to her. I'm not sure if she developed it, but it's certainly an important quote on its own. She once said that simple minds speak about people, and average minds speak about events, and large minds speak about ideas. Think about your conversations and your interactions. How much of it's about people? What this one did, what that one did, sports, relationships, who's going out with whom, who did what to whom. It's very, very empty talk. There's very little to gain from that. The next level up would be events. Events perhaps contain certain codes, certain content. They're events of importance. But ultimately, much of it is chaff. Much of it is husk. Few kernels of content. Ideas are pure content, pure important ideas that are exportable and expandable to your entire life. Every idea you talk about at 12:50 today, like we're discussing ideas now, not events, not people, hopefully will have currency, will have impact for the rest of your life. These are ideas you can carry with you. Right? That's why, think of a movie, let's say. Most movies are deeply, deeply lopsided towards events and people, and very, very shallow on content. So think about the last movie you saw, the superhero movie. Very exciting, it caused tiltulation of your heart, excitement, you saw the superhero, you saw the car chase. And then 5 hours later, what were you left with? Pretty much nothing, your life wasn't changed. Think of reading one page of a good book or one page of a Gemara, and you'll see all of a sudden, 5 hours later, I've got ideas, I've got issues that I can wrestle with and use to shape my life. So this is how the Rambam describes Avas Hashem, to encounter Hashem's majesty, to stretch your imagination. The Rambam writes again, it's read it quickly. Ma'asav is Hashem's activities, and bruvas are his creations. For the meantime, you don't have to distinguish between the two, but loosely speaking, what does Hashem do? What are his actions, or what are his creations? And bruv would be a code word for Torah as well, because Torah is Hashem's creation, and the condensation, or the encapsulation of his will. Haniflayim, there should be wondrous. Hagidolim, they certainly have a sweep. Able to see the wisdom in Torah, the wisdom in our world. A lot of boys are speaking to me about being more careful about brachos. That's a great anchor to think about Hashem on a more frequent basis during your day-to-day. So one of the brachos to start with is Asher Yatzar. It's easy to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the workings of the human body. You don't need much depth perception to see how carefully calibrated, how carefully the hormones, the enzymes, physiology, skeletal muscle, maybe take a few minutes to read about it. It's an incredible engine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu developed, an incredible machine. You can see it in the human body. When you say Asher Yatzar, you're not just making a bracha about going to the bathroom. Rofei Chol Basar Mafli Lasos. You're describing the miracle of the human body. Miyad Hu Ohev Umishabeach Umifayer Umisavet Tavagadola. Here's the challenge. Let me put it into a different context for you. Very often, boys will come over to me and say, Rebbe, I don't feel passionate about religion yet, or passionate about Torah. How can you help me? My first question is always, well, what do you feel passionate about? And that's a very surprising question. It unsettles the boy. He says, that's a really good question. What I feel passionate about? What do you feel passionate about? It may be sports and food, and now's the time to change your passion. Now's the time to upgrade your passion to ideas of importance. I feel passionate about Eretz Yisrael. I feel passionate about religion. I feel passionate about Torah. I feel passionate about Chesed. I feel passionate about a person that I know well and I care about well. So very often the inability to feel passionate about Torah and religion is merely reflective of immature passions. And you have to mature your ability to feel passions beyond food, sports, and whatever high schoolish adolescent things attracted your interest. It's not as if you have to redirect your passion. I think you have to build the ability to feel passion. And if you're not someone who feels passion, I think your first question is, why don't I feel passion? And of course, in many respects, it's because many times people are afraid to feel passion. They feel their passions won't be fulfilled. They won't accomplish. It's an underconfidence. If it's relationships, will the passion be reciprocated? If I feel passion towards a certain person, a lot of people have a hard time going out. Maybe I'll be hurt. Maybe that person won't feel it back to me. And they live very, very sheltered and caged lives, because to feel passion is to expose yourself. It's to believe in something. It's to basically, if you want a workman's definition of passion, it's to believe in something that you love more than yourself. So there's a decentralization. I feel passionate about ice cream, that would be silly, because I don't believe in ice cream more than myself. Say I feel passionate about Eretz Yisrael, I really believe in Eretz Yisrael more than I believe in myself. Part of my life is geared towards Eretz Yisrael. Part of my life is geared towards Torah. Part of my life is geared towards family. So I've decentralized myself. And passion is the exit strategy from the prison of ego. Living in the prison of ego, then it's hard to feel passionate, because your primary interest is yourself. Feeling passion means exiting that cage and really being committed to other ideas and events and experiences that you really feel are more important than yourself. And therefore you deliver your investment, your emotional investment to those ideas, and you feel them very deeply. So this is a good way to start about Ahavas Hashem. Are you able to unlock this wonder at HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You've been here for a couple of months. You're able to feel that there's a system of Shas that you can live 1,000 lives and still not crack. What does that do for you? So it creates intimidation, helplessness, futility. Those are all good feelings. You're part of something larger than yourself. You don't have to finish it. Let me give you a mental experiment. If I told you, you have the following choice. You could swim a lap in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, or you could swim the same lap in the Pacific Ocean. We'll put two boats on either side and measure the distance of one lap in a pool, and you could swim from one boat to the other. I hope everyone here would choose the Pacific Ocean. You're swimming the same distance. You're coming into contact with the same cubic meterage of water, whatever water your body's hitting. But to swim in the ocean, to have that sense that I'm swimming in the Pacific Ocean. Or if I told you, you have a choice. You could hold an ice cube. I'll take you into the kitchen today and I'll give you an ice cube. Or I could fly you to Norway and go put their hand on top of a glacier that's the size of a continent. What would you choose? I would hope the glacier, but your hand is holding the same surface area of ice, and so you're part of something larger. Are you able to sense that? This is the world, this is the ocean. The greatest Jewish people have navigated endlessly, days and nights, the greatest minds. They could have beaten Leonardo da Vinci to all of his discovery. I'm sure the Ramban could have preempted Leonardo da Vinci if he wanted to. I'm sure what the Rambam did makes Michelangelo look like amateur hour, the way he exerted his intellect. Think of it in terms of more specific. If I wanted to, I'm not touting myself, I just want to make it more real for you. I could have been a millionaire. I could have cracked all the technology accomplishments. I was on that route. I chose a life to engage and invest in Hashem's will. I want to understand Hashem's will. I'm mediocre in Torah. I would have been a champion in technology or whatever field I chose. I'm mediocre in Torah. The Rambam could have clearly lapped any of the great scientists, but they wanted to engage in Hashem's endless, infinite will. Is that something that engages you and enchants you and says, wow, I'm learning one little speck today, a Tosfos, but that's part of such a large ocean that all entails Hashem's will, and I feel thrilled to make even incremental advance and to know one more detail of Hashem's will. And even though I'll never necessarily network it the way the Rambam did and Rabbi Akiva did, at least I'm part of that process. I'm an insider. And there's nothing I'd rather do for the next hour than try to gain as much information on HaKadosh Baruch Hu as I can. So that's one way to love Hashem. Unfortunately, passion, enchantment, depth, intellectual curiosity are deeply challenged in our world. Sorry, someone had a question. It's very tired. I forget who had a question. Someone? Okay. Stop here. I'm sorry about the delay. We'll finish next week in Mitzvah. Okay?